Good morning. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, Connecticut. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It is December 28th, 2016. Welcome to Bicycle Talk. This week with my co-host, Fran Storch, and we have a guest, too. We'll get to the guest in a moment. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or would like to contribute information to the show, please call or text at 860-486-9487, or you can email me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. If you're listening to us on podcast, you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. Okay, here we go. Let's see. We're getting near the end of the year. We're getting near New Year's resolution time. I was going to do a rant there, but I'm going to pass on it because something came up this week which brought me to the rant of the week, Ron's current rant of the week, which is going to be directed at driving. People who are driving the cars, people, cars, and trucks who like to make a right-hand turn into wherever they're going, either a street and or a business or whatever it is they're turning into. And they look and they see a cyclist up the road and they go, well, it's just a person on a bicycle. I can get around them. And then they turn right into us. And you have to understand that we're traveling at a rate of speed, which is anywhere from 10 to 25 miles per hour on the road, and we're going faster than you realize we are. So please, if you have to make a turn into a road or into a business or whatever it is that you're turning off the road on to, please wait for the cyclist to get by where you're turning before you turn. So that's my rant of the week. I just wanted to make sure that people are aware of that. Again, I know I'm preaching to the choir out here, but that's okay. Anyway, we're going to move on from that. We're going to go to, we have a guest today. It's very exciting when we have a guest. We always love having guests here. And we have the new executive director of Connecticut Bike Walk, Adina Gianelli. Gianelli is like Italian.
It is.
Yeah, but Adina is not.
Adina is not.
Yeah. You've thrown a curve at me because I got the Italian thing going on. Fran has the Jewish thing going on, and it seems like you got the best of both worlds here.
I do. I'm a pizza bagel, as they say.
No! You're a pizza bagel. There you go. Perfect. That's very good. Okay, Adina is here, and she is again from Connecticut Bike Walk, which is an awesome organization. I've been a member of it for a number of years. Before that, I was a member of the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition. So the previous organization, and you are here to discuss Connecticut Bike Walk and the various things that are going on there. But you have to start with the big question every guest gets when they come on to my show is they get the question of what was your very first experience that you can remember with a bicycle?
Yeah, that's a great question, and it has me thinking about my early experiences on bikes. I will confess, I don't know if it's a secret to your audience, but I was prepped with that question. So when Ron...
I sometimes prep people.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So when Ron, when you told me that that was my question, or when I read in my email that that was the question, I thought, I don't actually think I recall my first, like, learning how to ride a bike. I know that my father was involved, and I'm sure it was stressful and painful and beautiful and wonderful and all of those things that learning to ride a bike can be and are. But my first memory of being on a bike was, I must have been 6 or 7, and it was the 1980s, which I suppose places my age. And I'd been given for
my
birthday.
It makes you young.
It makes me young.
Younger than I, for sure.
I had and still have a summer birthday, and someone in my family gave me a little bicycle radio that I could, like, listen to the radio while riding.
I remember those.
My bike. And this was the greatest thing ever. And so I recall riding up and down my street and listening to Whitney Houston, The Greatest Love of All. That's my first memory. And
wow.
I remember Whitney singing the line, you know, I believe that I'm not going to sing for you because I want you to keep your audience. And if I sing, you won't have any more listeners, at least not until next week. But I recall Whitney Houston singing, believing the children are the future and riding my bike and just really feeling it with
the
wind
beautiful.
In my hair.
Oh,
wow.
I love
boy,
that.
Boy, you may win the gold star for the best response on this question.
And thank you
impressive.
For giving me an opportunity to think about it.
Yeah.
I remember it every few years quite fondly, of course. But yeah, that's the first thing I remember.
That's
wow.
one of my mother's songs. She
really?
Thinks it's a fantastic, well, because she's a teacher.
Right.
And I
right.
believe the children are our future. And
I believe
teaching,
the teacher, but I believe the children are the future and you're riding your bike?
Yes, it's
this
fantastic.
Is like, wow, what a great combination.
The greatest love of all, it's to teach children to value themselves, to have good self-esteem. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful song.
So I'm assuming that you are, that was a wonderful answer. I'm assuming that you are still riding a bicycle.
I am. Not as often as I would like, and I don't know if I'm supposed to say that as executive director of Bike.
You can say it as much as you want. I'm in the bicycle industry, and I don't ride my bike as often as I would like. So, we all understand this. It's okay. So, if as long as you're out riding your bike, as long as you're still connected to your bike, that's a beautiful thing. It's perfect.
Yes. And I have a 5-year-old who's at sort of a point of transitioning
yes.
from the trike.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And the balance bike and the bike with training wheels to riding, more independently, which is exciting and also beautiful and a great metaphor.
Can I give you advice?
Oh, please. I would love some.
First of all, ditch the training wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Do not use them. Do
yes.
not make that it becomes a dependence thing. And they just training wheels are, I hate them. I just hate them. And the first thing you do, you just take the training wheels off the bike mm-hmm. and do the balance bike like they're doing now. Take the pedals off if you have to so they get used to the size of the bike and just kind of scoot around on it and then put the pedals back on and let them go. But ditch training wheels for sure.
Yeah.
And then the other piece of advice that I give people on this is there's a wonderful device out there called a trail-a-bike, which is an attachment to the back of your bicycle that gives them a set of pedals and a wheel and a set of handlebars, and you attach to them, and it turns your bike into a tandem.
Oh,
and then you
fantastic.
Just go out and you just ride yeah. together and you never have to worry about them wandering into traffic.
All
and,
right.
you can be a little bit of an overprotective mother, which is okay,
mm-hmm.
because you certainly don't want your child to get run over. And you can go a lot further than they can on their own.
Yes.
So it's kind of a neat transaction. You go from there and then you can transition to a tandem eventually and all that. You can do all that. But, yeah, those are my two pieces of advice to you, but... Get him on a bike. Get him on now. A daughter, son?
Son.
Son. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Exciting.
It is exciting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is exciting. And he's a little cautious. He's not, he's not listening to Whitney Houston and riding into the wind yet, but that's...
I have an idea. Get him a bike radio.
A bike radio.
There you go. I'm sure they're still out there.
He can be an early...
Right.
An early listener.
There you go. There you go. We'll get him into a podcast. He listens to the podcast.
Fantastic.
And there you go. And you'll be all set. Well, that's wonderful. So so you're bringing your child up right because you put them on a bicycle. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Good move. You've definitely won me over already. And you are riding your bicycle. Do you live near work or you do not have that luxury?
Well, I actually do most of my work from home.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I have a commute that's too short to get on a bike for, I would say.
I have that commute also sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So that's good. So you go from one room to the next room in your house, and you don't have to ride your bike there.
No.
You get a unicycle and kind of do that.
That could be a fun adventure for 2017, I think.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay. So as executive director of Connecticut Bike Walk, what is it that you're doing?
That's another great question. So I'm, I would say, relatively new in the role, or very new in the role, depending on how you look at things. I've been at Bike Walk Connecticut for about 2 months, so I'm still in my onboarding period and getting, learning the organization from the inside, and getting to know its you know, its constituents and members and traveling around the state and meeting with different folks from local bike organizations and pedestrian organizations. And we're currently really thinking about how to expand in our reach to best fulfill our mission and our board of directors' vision for the organization. And to that end, we are currently exploring possibilities of really expanding and enhancing a statewide bicycle coalition, bike ped coalition, mm-hmm. of local organizations and advocacy groups throughout the state, so that we can really all benefit from that, which is a really exciting thing. I'm also working to plan, you know, to plan for 2017. Obviously, our legislative advocacy agenda is high on the list, as is, you know, thinking through what it is we'll be doing in terms of events and programming and education and outreach in the year ahead.
Good, good. Now, so you have here the mission in rural Connecticut, perceptions and misperceptions. What would be the misperceptions?
Well, I think, and maybe it's erroneous to call it a misperception, but I don't think so. I guess I'll back up for a moment.
Okay.
So I think there's a perception of Bike Walk Connecticut as an organization that serves the interests of serious cyclists.
Ooh,
and, you know, and obviously that's true. But, you know, we do so much more than that and have such potential to really serve, I would say, everyone in the state, whether you identify as a cyclist or even ever get on a bicycle or not, because we're all using the streets in these ways, such that by advancing the agenda of Bike Walk Connecticut and, you know, serving the needs of our constituents, we're also fulfilling a much broader mandate to make the streets safe and accessible for everyone. I know even, you know, when I was in the process of being brought on, speaking to people in my own family and social world about my interest in the organization and my sincere hope that I would be selected to be in this role, people said, well, you're not like a hardcore cyclist. And I said, well, I ride my bike all the time. What are you talking about? But people have this vision that if you're you know, a hype, if you're not, you know, on the path to the Tour de France, then you're not like a real cyclist. So I think part of my work will be undoing some of that and hopefully in the process bringing more people on board and engaging with our organization. Because really, you know, many, if not most of us, we begin, you know, our lives and our, you know, in childhood we ride bikes. And then many, if not most of us, lose that. Is like, you know, maybe it's in adolescence or later when cars enter our lives. I was thinking about this, too, in the context of coming over here this morning, how I experienced such a sense of really wonder and freedom and joy and like thrill. And I still do whenever I get on a bike. And I recall when I was an adolescent, you know, around the time when many suburban teenagers learned to drive a car and get a license, I wasn't really interested. And eventually I did. In my 20s, I got a driver's license and you know, I now drive as well. But an uncle, my favorite uncle, said to me at the time, Dina, a car is freedom. And I said, oh, no, Gary, you have it all wrong. Like, I have so much more freedom on my bike.
Oh, my God, the car is a trap. It's, you know, I look at it entirely differently from a perspective of, you know, car freedom. Let me see. I've got car payments. I've got maintenance. I've got, you know, you're just, your insurance, you're just trapped in a car. Whereas you get on your bike and there's the real freedom. That's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it always amazes me how people think. But we're brought up in a very automobile-based society.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to, you know, you're going to see that. You're definitely going to see that. You know, there have been some very famous people like, you know, Albert Einstein and Mark Twain who have made comments about bicycles over the years. And it's, you know, it's a very basic machine. It's a wonderful machine. It really is. And I wish we could get the perception of what the bike is all about and how, you know, it's, everybody should ride a bike. You know, Fran hears this all the time. I'm always like, you know, I just don't understand. Everyone should ride a bike because it's, to me, it's a very important piece of equipment. And I've been on my bike my whole life. I started out when I was younger riding my bike as transportation. Mm-hmm. That's how I got around town because we didn't have, you know, mom in the minivan and transporting us everywhere. We just, you know, if you wanted to go see your friend across town, you hopped on your bike and went over there and did it. And it was good. It was a good thing. And, you know, I will admit that I have become one of those Lycra-clad individuals, as I believe Fran has too. And we are deemed as the serious cyclists. But I also am real happy to just ride my bike down the street and go somewhere and just, you know, not use it in that manner. I get that comment a lot. That misconception is a big one. That's a really, really big one. Because, you know, I'll say something about, well, I should take you for a ride sometime. Oh, I could never ride with you. I get that. And it's like, why not? Why not? You know, we'll just go out and we'll do a short ride. A few weeks back, around election time, we were having election discussions and the you know, the results of the election, which some people were happy about and some people were not happy about. And I pushed out the idea that what we needed to do is we needed to take this in a positive direction because there's a lot of talk about infrastructure rebuild. And this is the time to get active with your local legislator. Take your local legislator out for a ride. And if that ride is a mile, great. That's all. It doesn't have to be far. Just put them back on a bike again because you get back on your bike and you get this big grin on your face and you start feeling right. You know, the world just feels right. So, anyway, John F. Kennedy said, nothing compares to the simple pleasure of a bike ride.
Mm.
John F. Kennedy, how about that? You know, there's just, this is good stuff. So, you don't have to be a serious Lycra-clad person to be an racer and all that to be on, you know, serious about bikes.
And mind you, there are people who will say, well, I can't go slow. I can't slow down. Oh, I can't go up the hill slow. And I'm like, all right. So, you know, cut yourself off from most of the people in the country and don't ride with them. I mean, I will ride with anybody. You know, there are times when I want to ride for training and I want to ride hard or fast. But if somebody wanted to ride with me, whoever they were, I would ride with them and I would ride at their pace. And now if you ride faster than me, I might not be able to do that. But the other direction, you know, when people say I could never ride with you? Yes, of course you can, because I will ride with you. So,
yeah. So, you know, Lance Armstrong did us a wonderful service and a wonderful disservice all at the same time. And, you know, we could have an entire show on Lance Armstrong, but
maybe we should do that.
And maybe we should. And I actually have some people we could bring in for that. That's an interesting idea. We'll write that one down.
All right.
But, you know, what he did was he brought bicycle racing to the United States. I mean, he brought it to the fan base that was beyond just people who rode bikes. He introduced it to people who watch football and NASCAR and all these other different things. And he really grabbed a lot of really positive attention. But because of that, everyone thinks if you ride a bike, you're one of those Lance Armstrong guys. I've had that comment made to me. And it's like, no, I am as far away from Lance Armstrong as I could ever be, believe me. But anyway, that perception is hard because, you know, I mean, I ride into, I ran into Hartford every year for the annual, you know, ride to work day, the national ride to work day. And I ride from here. So it's a pretty good ride. By the time I get done, I've got a large number of miles on. I ride to my bicycle dealers and I, you know, do my job and then I ride back home and I've got close to 100 miles by the time I get done. Not your normal bike commute, but I did it a number of years ago as a publicity stunt with the Hartford Courant, saying that, you know, my point being that anybody can ride their bike to work. Come on, anybody can do it. If this guy will do it, then why can't you ride 5 miles to work? Mm-hmm. So that was my point I was trying to make. And you know, you don't have to be all dressed up like, you know, in the suit in order to do that sort of thing. You can simply ride to work. There's a woman who rides into one of the insurance companies every day, and she has this incredible pannier that drapes across the back of her bike, and it holds her business suit in it. And it's made especially for a bicycle to fit on the pannier to make it so that when she gets to work, she can take a quick shower and then she can look presentable for work. There's ways around it. You don't have to, you know. And if you want to ride down to the grocery store, grab something, ride home, ride your bike. But anyway, you're right. That's a hard one to work on, that whole perception thing. So I guess I understand that. So what's Bike Walk Connecticut's 2017 plans?
Well, another great question. Thanks, Ron. We are obviously at a time of transition, which is exciting. And I think we have a great opportunity. In terms of thinking about perceptions and misperceptions and also the organization's history, we, over the tenure of Bike Walk Connecticut, which started as the Central Connecticut Biking Alliance and has since expanded both in terms of geographic scope and also in terms of our mandate, which now includes cyclists and walkers, and now has a statewide reach. One of the things that I'm thinking about strategically for the year ahead and, of course, beyond is how we can really meet the needs of walkers and cyclists throughout Connecticut. I think historically, starting as an organization that served Hartford and Greater Hartford, and Hartford, of course, being our capital city and a population center, obviously, a lot of our work has focused on this area. And I'm really thinking about how we can maximize our reach to serve folks throughout Connecticut and to have more programming and educational and outreach opportunities throughout the state that also capture the broadest possible audience. And, you know, that, frankly speaking, introduce and, you know, invigorate people around the idea of bicycling. Just yesterday, I received a wonderful email, and, you know, we receive all kinds of emails, but from a woman who wanted to learn how to ride a bike. And she didn't know who to reach out to. So I was very, I may have overwhelmed her with my, you know, the enthusiasm of my response.
You're kind of a good person to contact on that, but not really the right person to contact
right.
on
so
that.
I was able to connect her with resources in her area through the League of American Bicyclists and like local cycling organizations. But that also turned on another light bulb in my head because I'm thinking about how we can do more educational programming and interact more with schools and think strategically about how we can work with the Department of Education to, as well as the Department of Transportation, Department of Motor Vehicles, to really infuse both our K-12 curriculum and our other educational offerings statewide with bicycling education. But really, you know, initially I was thinking about children because I think that's critically important, and in terms of changing the culture and changing the ways in which people think about transportation, starting with young people who are very enthusiastic and ardent cyclists is a way to go. But we also have adults who never learn how to ride a bike, and I think it's a really beautiful thing to be able to work with them.
And they can learn. I have taught adults how to ride bikes who have never learned how to ride a bike. And it is far more challenging than teaching a child how to ride a bike, for sure. But you can do it. It's a longer way to fall down.
Right.
It tends to have a little bit more risk involved with it. But you can certainly do it. And when you do get them at that point where they get it, mm-hmm. and they understand it. It's just, it opens your world. It's just a great thing. The kid thing is a big one. I think I maybe had a rant one week on this, or I can't. I know I've discussed this on this show in the past, but we have a really we have a very strange system here, because what we do is we teach people how to operate vehicles on the road when they turn 16 years of age, but that vehicle is a motorized vehicle. But we do not do that for kids. And so we expect little kids that are riding their bikes on the road, that are allowed to ride their bikes on the road, although that's becoming fewer and further between, we expect them to know the rules of the roads. Why don't they know the rules of the roads? Why don't we educate them? Why don't we start at a very young age, like first grade? I'm talking very, very beginning. Wouldn't it be great if we could put bicycling into the curriculum of every single student as they grow up through the elementary school system? So there's a target for you.
Absolutely. I think it's a phenomenal idea.
Yeah, I think that's, we have to start somewhere. You know, I mean, you know, I've talked about that with Fran when we talk about health and fitness. You know, how do you get people? How do we stop this, you know, childhood obesity issue and this, you know, horrible nutrition issue? You have to start from the beginning. You have to start down low. You have to start with the kids, because the kids will educate the parents.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, there's an angle. I don't know if it'll work or not, but maybe working directly with the Department of Education is the right answer. So
indeed.
That's good. Yeah, that would be a good thing.
And, of course, it's never too late to, you know, introduce healthy habits and make lifestyle changes. But I think, you know, experientially, and the research certainly suggests strongly, that it's much easier to instill and inculcate children with good habits at an early age and then maintain them throughout their life versus doing it on the back end. That poses a whole set of challenges.
Right. Look at the kids wearing helmets now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like everyone wears helmets now, and it's that was never the way. I mean, I never wore a helmet when I was a kid. I never did that. I mean, we didn't even know what they were. And then when I did finally wear a helmet, it was only because I was racing bicycles and I was required to wear one.
Mm.
And it wasn't much of a helmet, but I have pictures. They're pretty bad. But, you know, it's what was required, so it's what I wore. But now every kid has their helmet on, and, you know, they won't walk out of the house without their helmet. And, you know, my son was brought up that way, and I remember him, you know, giving me a hard time because I didn't have my helmet on yet. And he was walking around the house with his helmet on, which is kind of funny. But it's, you know, the kids will educate the parents is the whole point. So, yeah, the kids, great way to start. Great way. So are you working with the Department of Transportation, or as we unfortunately back in the day used to call them, the Department of Cars and Trucks?
We are. We are planning to really reinvigorate a relationship with the Department of Transportation.
Just I could get you a cattle prod.
About a week ago, I had a meeting with Commissioner Redeker, and that I think was purely an introductory meeting, but I have a strong sense of optimism that we're going to be able to move that needle in the direction we wanted to go.
Good. He has been here for a while, I think. He mm-hmm. moved up here from New Jersey, if I'm remembering correctly. He was at one of our Connecticut Bike Walk annual dinners mm-hmm. and was the main speaker. And he's a good one. He really gets it. He comes from New Jersey. New Jersey had some very positive things they were doing. And the things that came out, I wish I had recorded that speech, because I would love to play it for you.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Because he
yeah.
had a list of things he wanted to do. And he was really, I looked at him as, oh my God, he's the answer. You know, this guy is actually, he understands it. He understands that transportation isn't just cars and trucks, that there's other alternatives out there too. And I think if you push his buttons, you can probably go a long way with him.
I'm inclined to agree. Absolutely, Ron. And something that he's said, and this is something that that I'm finding in speaking with legislators and others throughout the state. And I imagine this is not a surprise to you or maybe many of your listeners, but for those who maybe haven't ever contacted a legislator, it takes relatively few people to really turn the dial.
It's amazing. Yeah.
So, mm-hmm. you know, if folks who are listening, who are maybe disinclined to make contact with their legislator, the legislature will go into session next week. It is a great way of affecting positive change without a ton of legwork. Just something as simple as making a call can make things happen.
And my local legislators have said that. They mm-hmm. said it really doesn't require a lot. We just have to hear from a few people, and we're very easily moved in a direction. So if you have the idea that, oh, they'll never do that, this would be a great idea, but, oh, they'll never do that, don't do that. Don't do that. Come forward with your idea. Be positive about it. And, you know, I'm working with a local town here trying to get them to put the East Coast Greenway Trail onto their main street.
Mm.
And they definitely have the attitude of, oh, we're never going to do that. But, you know, I have a lot of people behind me now, and we're starting to move this thing forward, and it's probably going to happen, or I hope it's going to happen. They're listening, and they hear this, and they go, oh, that darn Ron again. There he is. But there, you know, you got to stay diligent with it, and you have to make sure that you get things done. There's a road up here that finally got completed after 10 or 12 years of kind of going nowhere and never being completed, and it's supposed to have a tech park on it and all that right on the north end of UConn campus. And when the road went through, I talked to my state legislator about it, my local person. And he was very excited to tell me that he was getting the funds to get this thing to go through. He was very excited to contact me again and let me know that they were now working on the project. And when he contacted me on that, and I said, and there will be a bike trail on both sides, right? There's going to be bike markings on both sides. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, because he forgot. Okay, but he didn't forget, and it's there, and it's done, and now there is a safe passage from the north end from Route 44 down to campus, to the north end of campus, that is designated as a bike path.
Mm.
So now you can come in safely, which is good.
Yes.
And, you know, but if you don't say it, they won't hear you. So, you know, get out and say something.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, that's a good thing. The Department of Transportation could use a little bit of a kickstart. They definitely need to understand that transportation isn't just cars and trucks, and that there are other methods of transportation, which more and more people, what we're finding is that with the millennial class that is out there now, there's a lot more, especially when you get into Boston or Hartford or any of the major cities, you see a lot of them are not owning cars. And so the mode of transportation is either walking, mass transportation, or bicycle. And so there's a growing concern here for the safety of those people. And how are you addressing that, or how are you going about that?
Yeah, no, it's absolutely right. And I think that certainly in the context of our work at Bike Walk Connecticut, that's very much on our radar. And part of our work, I think, is being attentive to those shifts and also creating pathways for accessing modes of transportation that we may think of, or a majority of people may think of, as the alternative, but really that all of us are using in one way or another. Even folks who are ardent drivers or passengers of cars, you still are walking on streets. And it sounds so fundamental as to be almost redundant or something that you wouldn't need to say, but complete streets benefit everyone. And, you know, the safer streets are, the more inclined people are going to be to use them. I've spoken to many people in my short tenure thus far at Bike Walk Connecticut who've said, you know, I used to ride my bike to work, and I relocated, and the routes that I need to take don't feel as safe. People also have misperceptions about what it takes to be a bicycle commuter, for example. But I think working toward the really critical goal of complete streets that are safe and accessible for everyone is pivotal. And as you know, as part of that work, engaging folks who are using streets via multimodalism, whether that's walking, biking, using public transit, or other mixed modes of transportation, is really crucial.
And there's actually a Complete Streets program out there, is there not?
There is. And yes.
What, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. So the Complete Streets program is something that we are engaged very actively in. Bike Walk Connecticut serves as the Complete Streets clearinghouse for the state of Connecticut through a partnership with the Department of Public Health. We provide regular updates and also education related to Complete Streets. Essentially, the program is designed to educate and provide access to information about communities that have completed streets, and also work on mechanisms for completing streets, which is to say making streets safe and accessible to everyone, not just motorists.
Right.
And that's another, you know, going back to the issue of perceptions and misperceptions, I think, and I don't want to speak on behalf of all drivers, but I think that many people who are driving motor vehicles have a misperception that the roads are theirs.
Oh,
and
boy.
That there is
touched a nerve.
And that, you know, they may graciously, you know, indulge folks who are walking or cycling at their discretion.
Right.
And not, you know, view streets in the way that they are intended, in the way in which the law, you know, mandates and protects that they are to be accessible to everyone, and that drivers and motorists need to share the road.
If you're a regular follower of my program, I had a rant a few weeks back about I'm a taxpayer and I pay for these roads. This is the typical motorist response, mm-hmm. or driver of a car or a truck, person who drives a car or a truck, to respond to you when they're angry with you being on the road with them.
Right.
And it's just, you know, the lamest argument out there, but we won't even. And I actually talked about how federal taxes are what pay for the roads, and it's not about the gasoline mm-hmm. taxes as much as it is the federal taxes. Mm-hmm. Much more money comes from there, and on and on and on. But yeah, that's a perception problem, and something that, you know, we need to do as an organization. We need to get that perception changed.
Absolutely.
One of the things, I'm just going to make a reference to this right now. If you want to know more about Complete Streets and you want to see more information about this, there is a website called smartgrowthamerica.org. And if you Google Complete Streets, that will pop up. And that is generally gives the whole National Complete Streets Coalition. I think they just changed their name recently.
I do believe so.
And that's why that is now called Smart Growth America. But gives you the vision, the programs, how you can take action and work with them, the resources. It's all right there on the website. So that's kind of a neat thing. But, yeah, we've have a long way to go. We're not Europe. And we... It's going to be a while until I think we come around, but I think that this new generation that we have right now, for various reasons, whether it be the fact that they don't have the jobs that were promised them when they came out of college, or the fact that they've moved back into cities because cities are more socially acceptable now to the younger generation. My son is living in Chicago right now,
mm-hmm.
and he is... Oh, if he hears this, he's going to get really angry. He's a classic millennial. You know, he definitely, he'll be the first to tell you he's not. But anyway, he doesn't own a car. You know, he just doesn't even think any reason why to own a car. Mm-hmm. And if he needs one, he'll rent one. And that's basically it. Otherwise, he's just not interested. And his entire generation is like that. So now is our time. This is like so important right now that we change everything and get it moving in the right direction. Get out of your car. That's it. Get out of your car. So in the past, over the years that I've been dealing with Connecticut Bike Walk and also with the what used to be the Connecticut Bicycle Coalition, which I was a board member of, there have been some laws passed, and we finally got the 3-foot law passed. That was quite a while ago. It's probably 5 or 6 years ago now. And that allows us, supposedly, 3 feet of space between us and a motorized vehicle that is passing us. And great law. Unfortunately, it's only enforced when the police pick you up off the side of the road because you've been hit by a vehicle. And that's the unfortunate part of that. But there was a new one that happened a little over a year ago that was kind of a revision to that. And that was the one where, yes, you have to give them 3 feet. And it is the 3 feet that the cyclist is to stay as far to the right as safely possible as determined by the cyclist, which was a big deal because you've ridden your bike on the road, right down the road. There's glass in the road. There are potholes. There are all sorts of things. I'm going to point a finger. Things that have been thrown out of motorized vehicles that are in front of you that you have to deal with. And so it is up to the cyclist now to determine how far to the right they need to be or can be. And there's also a second part of that law, which is really cool, is that if you have to pass a cyclist on the road and you have to cross that center line, it's no longer a ticketed offense. So you can legally cross that center line in order to get around the cyclist and not fear that you're going to get in trouble for it. Do you have other ideas coming up for the future as to what you want to get into the legislature?
Yes, this is obviously something that we're thinking about a lot, particularly at this point. And, it's an exciting time. There are many directions, I think, we can go. Obviously, we want legislation in Connecticut at the state level that offers the strongest possible protections for cyclists and walkers. I think something that's been on our radar for some time is strengthening the Connecticut crosswalk provision such that motorists will have to stop to someone approaching a crosswalk, not merely someone who's already in the crosswalk.
They have to be in the crosswalk. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm.
So there, I think there's real potential there. We have constituents who I think would like us to work on increasing criminal sanctions and penalties for motorists who harm or kill someone while.
Please do something about that. That's a big one.
Yeah, it's really striking would be like the most polite adjective that I can think to apply to the situation. But frankly, it's horrendous how weak the language of the legislation is in terms of sanctioning someone who kills someone operating what is dangerous heavy machinery.
And that, it's nationwide.
Yeah,
too.
The penalty really, when I learned that, it just blew me away.
You're here.
Yeah, well, Fran's father was killed a few weeks ago in a pedestrian situation with a car. And he was crossing at a crosswalk and was hit by a pickup truck. So you're definitely hitting a nerve here, which is very close to us. This is, and I have been, on the phone with Florida Bike Walk mm-hmm. because I thought, well, there must be a Florida Bike Walk. And sure enough, there was. And I spoke with a woman yesterday and she gave me some ideas about what to do. But she said, you're right. Our laws are terrible for this sort of thing. And I said, well, you're not alone. I think it's nationwide that this is a problem and a concern. There's the, I call it, and those of us that are the in the advocacy group that are somewhat controversial call it murder by bicycle or murder by pedestrian, you know, because you can kill someone and can get away with it. You can walk away with it. And you're, this is something that has to, and this is a tough one because you are in the insurance state now. So now you're in a position where you need to go against the people. And this was explained to me by someone who, I think it was the woman from Florida that I spoke with yesterday. And she said, you know, that there's a limited liability on your insurance policy. And that is why this is happening, because it's been given, the insurance companies have been given the luxury of only having to pay out a little bit of money when it happens. So it's not enforced. So when it's not enforced, and if they have to cut a check for $100,000, $200,000, or $300,000, and there's a cap on it because that's the way it's been set up with a cap. Actually, I spoke to a lawyer about this, and he said that there's a cap on it. And so you can't pursue any further than that. So if someone is to hit you on your bicycle and you were to die from it, you can only sue them for the maximum capped amount on their insurance policy. And they won't probably get jail time for it. And unless, of course, it's like the Kalamazoo 5, which is that's turned into a major issue. And I'm still waiting to see more information about the Kalamazoo 5, because obviously he ran down 9 cyclists and killed 5 of them. And he's got a lot of charges on him. And
he was also DUI.
He was, we believe, DUI. There's still no real evidence to, I mean, they haven't really disclosed anything. That's the other problem that happens, is that these incidents happen and there's not a lot of information. And it's hard to get a police report. It's hard to find out exactly what happened. But I think you're right. I think they did determine that he was impaired in some way. So that's what did that. But and he has, you know, 5 counts of negligent homicide on him, which apparently carried about 5 years per victim. But that's 25 years for killing 5 people. That's just really not good, not right. So you got a big one right there. That's, you know, and you need somebody who can really get in people. If you'd like to hire a lobbyist, I would be very, very happy to take action on this and help you out. But I don't know what your funds are like right now. I know what your funds are like right now. But anyway, that's what you need. You need someone that's in the faces of the legislatures and you know, telling them what they need to do here, because they have an enormous liability here. That, and it needs to be resolved, because people are more distracted now than I've ever seen them. Worse than ever.
That it is truly astonishing, the level of distraction among drivers. And, you know, whenever I'm a passenger in a car, particularly on highways, but really on any road, you can mark, you know, such a high percentage of people are fiddling with their phones or talking on their phones while they're driving.
That's not what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be driving. And, you know, Connecticut had, in the last 2 weeks, they had 8 deaths of pedestrians by cars, and 5 of them were in 1 week.
Yes.
I mean, it's completely out of control. And, you know, I know we're talking about pedestrians, but you are Connecticut Bike Walk, so you're both. But we're all the same victims. We're all the same people out there that could have this happen to us. And I would love to figure out a way to just jam the cell phone so it doesn't work when it comes near me. You know, you put the thing down. Put the thing down. Make it so it doesn't work when you're driving your car. Only for 911, and that's it. And, you know, but I know that will run into, I mean, you have huge roadblocks there. You've got, you know, obviously the car industry is not interested in that. The telecommunications industry is not interested in that. There are people that will certainly block it. Let's go to a cheerier note.
All right.
moving on, because I rant about this weekly, and you know, I know it gets old sometimes. 2017 Discover Connecticut Series. Talk to me about that.
Great. Yeah. So some of your listeners may know, Bikewalk Connecticut has this wonderful series called Discover Connecticut. So it's an opportunity for communities in partnership with Bikewalk Connecticut to put on a day-long ride or rides of varying lengths. Historically, it's been 25, 15, to 100 miles. Last year, the tours were in Glastonbury and New Britain. They were both very successful, from what I understand. I was not part of the organization then, but they're really a wonderful opportunity to get people out and riding, and to for folks who aren't local to the community where a ride is being hosted, to experience the cultural and historic attractions and landmarks of the given community while building camaraderie with other cyclists, and also for locals to a community to get out and explore their neighborhoods and backyards in ways that they may not have before in a large group context. So in 2017, we're planning a number of rides. The exact number has yet to be determined. We'll do at least two and hopefully more throughout Connecticut. And right now, we are in our nomination and application phase on the part of community organizations, groups, and municipalities from throughout Connecticut who are interested in partnering with Bikewalk.
And how would you find out about
ride.
That?
So there's more information on our website. If you go to www.bikewalkct.org, you can access the application. The easiest way to access the application right now on the main page of the website in the upper left-hand corner, there's a newsletter tab, and the application is in the newsletter on the, again, on
okay,
the
app. Okay, I see. Yeah, I see. Right.
So,
now. Great. That's great.
Yeah. So we're really
that's
looking
that's
to
a good
that.
Thing because then maybe we can get some more cities involved. Like New Haven would be a great place.
Yes.
And there's a real good activity group down there too. I'm sure you have connected with a few of the folks down there.
Yes. In fact, I'm going there next this afternoon.
Are you?
I'll be. Oh, in
very
New
nice.
Haven,
you're going to meet with Matthew Finer or Paul Hammer or
yes.
one of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. So so if your city wants to get involved or your town wants to get involved in the Discover Connecticut series, you need to contact you
yes.
at Bike Walk Connecticut.
Yes, and you can also email with any questions you may have about this series or what the application process entails. Our nomination period will close on February 3rd, and then we'll be meeting with all applicants in the first 2 weeks of February, and announcements of partner communities will be made on February 28th.
Keep me up to date on that, because I will announce it on future shows.
Oh, fantastic.
I would like to, if you could send me over any information you have, then I will continue to push this, and maybe I can get some more people in our communities involved in this, because this would be a nice thing. I know we have a local group here called Bike Mansfield, which has been very, very progressive in getting some things done here in town, and maybe that's something that we could do out here. Which would be kind of fun, too.
A phenomenal idea.
Yeah, yeah. And I, being an organizer, would be very happy to get involved in that, too. So, anyway, my guest today has been the new executive director of Connecticut Bike Walk, which is bikewalkct.org. Her name is Adina Gianelli, and you are new to the job. And I wish you all the luck, and I hope everything goes really positive and forward for you. We're counting on you to bring us forward here and get more recognition here in the state of Connecticut to bicycles and pedestrians and the safety thereof. I'm going to finish the show up here. It looks like I have a caller. And what was the question, Fran?
Yeah, we have a couple of questions.
Sure.
So we only have a couple of minutes, so mm-hmm. You'll have to keep it brief. But one of the questions was, it was Mike from Eastford.
Mike. Hi,
yep.
Mike.
And he wants to know if there are going to be more bicycle transportation centers like we have in stores put together in other major cities so that people can, store their bikes and take showers and have lockers, the kind of thing that we have here in stores. Are there going to be more of those? And I'll run the next question too. I think I can repeat it. And the other thing would be the expansion of the bottle bill, because there's a feeling that the bottle deposit is too low, because it's only a nickel in the state of Connecticut.
Therefore, we have more glass.
You got it. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. So the first, the transportation center.
Yeah, and thank you, Mike, for your questions. I think that the expansion of transportation centers throughout Connecticut is something that I would certainly love to work on in concert with municipalities and community agencies. I think it's a really important resource, and there's a great need for expansion. So certainly that's something I will be exploring, and I hope working on in the year ahead and in the period to follow. Likewise, the expansion of the bottle bill, I think, is a really important idea, which I'll be looking into. And Mike, if you'd like to connect with me directly about that, or if anyone else would, I can be reached at bikewalkct@bikewalkct.org.
All right. Very good. Thank you for your call, Mike. We always appreciate you calling us and listening. Mike was a bike commuter into Hartford for many years, into East Hartford. He was a teacher in East Hartford, and he lives out here in Eastford, Connecticut. So anyway, we're going to finish up because we've come close to the end here. I have to finish by giving a big, big plug to Cyclocross Nationals. It's near and dear to my heart. Obviously, you hear me talking about this a lot. I've had guests on about it, too. The Cyclocross Nationals are coming up. They will be starting on January 3rd. They are in Hartford, Connecticut. They are at Riverfront Park in Hartford, Connecticut. If you need more information about it, you can go to the CCAP website, which is www.ctcyclingadvancement.org. If you go there, you will find a link under events and series to the Cyclocross Nationals. When you go there, you can see the schedule. You can volunteer, which I will be volunteering almost every day there. I'm involved in it from setup to marshaling. You can see what's going on there. And if you look at that page, you will also see special events. And the special events are the after hours events that are going along with the before and after hours events, I should say, that are going along with this, including some junior coaching and other various things. It's right here. It's the national championships. It's in Hartford and it is happening. Please, please come out and check it out. And I am going to finish up. My name is Pedlin Ron. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch. And this is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS, Storrs, Connecticut.